What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I am Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Arya 8 of A Storm of Swords. Matt, how are you?
I don't think it's Arya 8. I think it's Arya 13.
Oh, wow. I'm tired. I'm sorry.
I can tell. It's okay. All good.
Man, I butchered that, eh?
You know, those Roman numerals, man, sometimes they get you. If had it been a V, then you would have been correct.
But it wasn't. It was an X.
It was an X.
I know Super Bowl numbers. I should know that.
You were right. You were close, man.
Wait, why are you writing down in the document in Roman numerals?
Because this is America. That's how it is in the books.
No, it's not. That's how it is on the wiki. There's no Roman numerals in there.
I guess you're right. It just says names. It just says Arya.
Which is actually, I'll be honest, kind of a huge pain in the ass because you'll be like, what chapter are you on? And people are like, Arya. And you're like, yeah, but which one? And they're like, I don't know.
I can convert it. Once it starts getting up to the higher numbers, I'm like, I can
do it when I'm
at one point. You get like a C in there and it's like, what? You
know, is there a
like,
C?
I think 100 is a C in Roman numerals.
What is C in Roman numerals?
XL is 50.
Yeah.
L is,
No. XL is L, 40.
XL is 40. So what is 50? 50 is L.
Yeah. X is 10 before 50.
I think
50.
C is 100 for like centuries.
C is 100. Yes, that is correct.
Yeah.
And D back. Is 500 and M is 1,000.
Well, if we were reading Wheel of Time, you'd definitely get to like chapter 1,000 in the story.
You sure would. What episode number is this of Bend the Knee, Matt? Do you know? What's our Roman numeral?
Well, it's not in Roman numerals. I think like technically there's way more episodes of Bend the Knee than there are like official episodes. But the official episodes are these ones, which are the chapters. So I think this is like chapter 2 something. I don't know. I put it on the doc. Or not on the doc, but on the thumbnail for the chapters. Okay. This will be episode 219.
All right. So that would be C. Shit.
CXIX.
Yes. But it would be CC because it's 200. So CCXIX.
We'll see. Let's see.
Matt and Jimmy take a side quest.
You are correct. CCXIX.
Let's go. That sounds like a cult.
It does.
Yeah, we lost. We lost Bethany. She joins CCX.
Yeah.
What was the other one? The Niven. The one that
From Smallville.
Yeah, she was the Keith Lanieri one, right?
I don't know, but the girl I'm from really Smallville, Allison, is there Allison Mack, who played what's her name? Chloe in Smallville. Yeah, some sort of.
And now she has a podcast about it.
Nixvum or something. She was
That's it. Nixvum.
Yeah, some sort of. She went to prison for a couple of years. And the one, well, the one guy who plays Lex Luthor in there, who's freaking great. He's like the best Lex Luthor. Yeah, he has a podcast and he's brought her on and stuff. I should watch.
Well, that. I think she has her own now.
She about has her own now too.
Her sure experience. It's like, well. Okay. Yeah. I guess that's fine for you to benefit off of it. I'm a big cult guy, real big in the cults.
Last week it was conspiracy theories. This week's it's cults.
I'm really into cults. Think about starting one.
I heard it's much more fun to be the leader of one than to be in one.
My favorite part about cult documentaries, and it's inevitable, is what episode, if it's a miniseries, what episode is the weird sex stuff going to happen? Because it's always about weird sex stuff every single time. It's like, oh yeah, they started this yoga and they got a bunch of followers. And by episode three, they're like, yeah, he was shoving potatoes. It's like, what? What are you talking about?
Have you seen the Waco miniseries?
Oh yeah, dude, I've seen everything.
Yeah,
so you name a documentary, your boys watched it. Okay,
yeah.
I watch the day things drop on Netflix. I watch it.
Yeah,
I'm the documentary guy.
You're not a documentary guy.
I haven't learned a goddamn thing.
I think my favorite Netflix documentary is Tiger. Still to this day, Tiger King.
It's really good. I have one recommendation for everyone, and I think it's from the same people. Well, there's actually two. Anyways, there's a series going on right now on HBO. It is the most ludicrous series I've ever seen. It's called Neighbors, and it's just about neighborly disputes. Mm-hmm. Matt, it is insane. I think Danny McBride made it. Yeah, it's Danny McBride. Dude, the last episode was preposterous. It was just showing dong the whole episode. I couldn't believe it, dude. They go to a nudist colony. It's so crazy.
Jeez. Hey, speaking of Neighbors, man, did you see that? I texted you about it earlier, just real quick, and then we'll get the episode started. Alan Richardson, the guy who plays Reacher, his neighbor, trying to like stop him on a motorcycle, and then he got like just like absolutely wrecked, and he held back. I mean, he could have really messed that dude up. But what were you thinking?
The precision of those strikes, dude. He pieced him up.
Yeah,
I mean, like, dude, that guy is an ox. Why would you try to just have started to?
Well, good. Him? Hey, lucky for him, he was wearing the helmet. Because otherwise everyone would be, this would be all over the tabloids and TMZ is everything. It's like, oh, he's some crazy.
Well, they tried that at first.
Yeah,
they did. And now the body cam footage is out.
Now the police are like, actually he can press charges against you. And he acted in self-defense.
Hell yeah. Didn't he go in the street and make him lay down his bike or something? And his kids were behind him.
He's riding. If you look at the GoPro footage he's got of it, he's riding his motorcycle. The guy like gets out in the middle of the street, and then he drops his bike, you know, him on it. And he's like, dude, you could have killed me. And then he tries to get back on, and the guy puts hands on him, and then he puts hands. Then Alan Richardson. I mean, that's Reacher, dude. I mean, that's Jack Reacher.
I'm not like great show, by the way. Great show. Oh,
phenomenal show.
I didn't know you watched it.
Oh yeah, man.
Dude, Reacher's he's a great actor. He's a great actor. I just watched
so much better of a Reacher than Tom Cruise. Not that Tom Cruise was bad in it, but it's just like in the books, Reacher is like a linebacker, not small Tom Cruise.
This is such a good segue, Matt. And I don't think I talked about this last week, but I watched a movie called War Machine, and it's starring Alan Richardson.
It's like Metal Gear Solid the movie.
Did you watch it?
I saw clips of it. I'm going to.
Dude, it is a phenomenal movie. It is a monster.
Metal Gear Solid. It's like, it's literally like
a mech movie.
It's straight up metal. I was watching this and I was like, because he's like training and trying to be in the SEALs. And then it's like, dude, this is like Metal Gear. I mean, it's literally what it looks like.
It's absurd. It is a mech movie, a monster horror movie. And it is also a war movie. It is so fun, and it's science fictiony, and it's just a blend of genres that don't ever come together, and I think it nails it. It's very cheesy, it's very 80s action, but in the best, it's self-aware. Like, it is, dude, Alan Richardson is so good in it.
Yeah, I mean, dude, he's phenomenal in everything he's in.
And
did you know the crazy thing about it is that, you know, he can sing amazingly well.
Really?
Yeah. So in the show Titans, which was the DC, like DC had their own streaming service. I'm pretty sure they had their own streaming service for a little bit. And then it ultimately got rolled into like HBO, whatever. That was back when it was like HBO Go and Now and Max and all that crap. Anyway. And he plays the characters Hawk and Dove are these two. So Titans is like Robin and it's like all the sidekicks, right? Like
yeah.
Gal and, you know, I mean, like yeah. Superboy and all those things. The first season's really good. And then it kind of goes downhill pretty fast. But he is in there and he's singing. And I was like, this has to be lip syncing. You look it up. It's like, no, dude, he can legit. I think he was on. I think he did an episode of American Idol or something.
What?
Yeah, dude.
No, he wasn't on American Idol. It was a Masked Singer.
Alan Richardson. Singing on American Idol. Yes, he did. He was auditioned. He auditioned on American Idol
before you said
this, and you passed the initial stage. Here it is, dude. I'll send it to you right here. Let me send you this link.
Wait, hold on. Now this is preposterous.
Because I remember they're like, there's this episode where they're doing like karaoke or something, and he's singing, and I was like, dude, that has to be like fake. And then you're like, no, dude, he can do it all, man.
So this is before he was fit. Yeah, it is. Oh my goodness.
He was originally supposed to be Aquaman in. Well, he was Aquaman in Smallville, and then he ended some other stuff, which is why a lot of people have been pulling for him to become the next Batman. He'd be freaking great.
I could see him being on that. By the way, I'm listening to this. This is phenomenal.
Oh, dude, he's so good, dude. I mean, he can do it all.
What in the world? He's also bipolar. So me and him basically are the same person.
There you go.
Because I also have bipolar.
You just need to stack. You just need to stack on about like 20 pounds of muscle.
I need to get on the trend.
Yeah.
I need to trend hard.
I think. Hey, if I were a movie star too, I'd be juiced up.
I'll tell you what. Here you go, Matt. You ready? I'm gonna tie it all back together. Alan Richardson for Egg on the Conqueror.
Down.
Forget down. Henry Cavill.
Like
Henry Cavill can be Visenya.
He definitely should do something in A Song of Ice and Fire, but he doesn't necessarily have to be Aegon. I know that everyone wants it, but I'm down for Alan Richardson to be.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm over Henry Cavill. Let's get Alan Richardson in. He just beat the dog shit out of his neighbor. He's in.
It was great. Yeah, he's dude. In.
Cavill's out.
What a clown thinking you like you just see so, you see some Jack dude riding around on his motorcycle and you're just like
that's just someone who's never been in danger. That's what that is.
Well he was the danger.
Dude, his face. He's doing interviews and stuff. He's like, he hit me in the face. His eyes are
so he's lucky he didn't take his helmet off and swing it at you because he would have freaking went what's his name? Miles Garrett on you and just like ended you, dude.
Mason Rudolph deserved it, let's be fair.
I'm sure he probably did. Not mistaken.
He's the worst.
With all of that, man, any Song of Ice Fire news we need to hit up before we get going here? I don't think there's not a whole
we're kind of
I did see something going on. There's talk about Jon Snow. I did see a little thing. Was it Westerosi's
movie? So I saw this. It sounds like it's something taken out of context from an interview like 60 days ago or something. It doesn't seem like it's anything.
Yeah, basically, I mean, we don't know, you know, it's an Arya, seems like it's going to be an Arya Stark series now, but it seems very likely that whether Paramount is going to be in charge or Warner Brothers, they're doing some kind of Game of Thrones successor show. We don't know what it's going to be, but it seems they're definitely going to try.
They have to.
Yeah, and maybe they're just going to be exploring stories and then if they find something, but if I mean, would you rather, real question, would you rather have an Arya Stark series or a Jon Snow series?
It's funny, Matt, because this is going to be my question for this chapter. I was going to ask you, who's your favorite Stark? And I think it's Jon Snow. I'm pretty sure it's Jon Snow, right?
Well, yeah, I guess he's a Stark, whether he's half Targaryen or not. Yeah.
He's half.
Jon is my number one character.
Yeah, that's your boy. Arya's my favorite Stark.
Yeah.
Other than Rickon. I'm kidding. He couldn't even zigzag. So yeah, I think I'd rather see the Arya show, I think. Plus, here's the thing, dude.
It depends
if Faceless Men.
Right. That could be cool. But if Paramount gets it and it turns out to be you know, what's West of Westeros, they're just gonna let that Tyler Sheridan dude from freaking Yellowstone do it, and it's gonna be California. Okay. And then I mean that's all it's gonna be. Every show he has, like Landman, it's all just like every like episode, they just gotta say something negative about California. Okay. Oh geez, California.
The amount of people California. Who talk bad about California that have not been there is very high.
It's like sunny and great.
Dude, I've been to California plenty of times. It's the best. Year.
I mean, for us, it's just zoom down there.
Yeah. I mean, we're not paying the taxes and whatnot, but like,
yeah, California is our number one listening state in the United States, according to our graphs, by the way.
Shout out to California.
I think New York's number two. So shout out to New York.
I love New York too.
I do too.
Maybe my two favorite places in the union, actually. So
hey, there you go. What's your
favorite place in the union, Matt?
In the United States? Oh, like most states in the South.
You got to pick one city. Which one you do not go into?
Which city would I not want to go to?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to like Missouri, Mississippi, Alabama.
I can just hear
Georgia.
So many people hitting stop.
For starters, the humidity. I'm out. I don't do humid climates like that anymore. It's just not going to happen. Okay. Then you got bugs, alligators in Florida. I'm out. Ain't going. I ain't going. Not going to Florida.
You have brown recluses up where you are, though.
I've never once seen one.
Well, yeah, you don't see them until they bite you.
Well, just saying. I ain't going where alligators are. How hard is it to get bit by an alligator if you don't go near them? That's pretty hard.
That's a very good point.
I'm not going to Disney World and getting bit by a gator if I'm not there.
You think they're just perusing around Magic Kingdom?
Well, that's what happened to that kid. Remember a couple years ago, that kid in Disneyland? He got pulled underneath.
Is that Harambe?
No, that was a kid. That was like a kid at a water park or a Disney water park. Don't you remember that?
Well,
is that kind of Brit? Yeah.
I
tragic. Can't do it.
I have so many jokes, but none of them are appropriate, so I just won't say anything.
That's okay. Let's dive into the chapter today here, which is great chapter. One of my top five moments in the Game of Thrones TV show. So this is Arya 13, by the way. Sandor Clegane and Arya Stark come to the inn at the crossroads. To Arya's dismay, she recognizes Polliver and the Tickler with a pimply squire. The squire tries to bait Sandor with insults about fleeing King's Landing, and the room is tense. The Hound demands wine, which the innkeeper brings, and Sandor gulps it down. When Sandor claims the men-at-arms will torture the innkeeper for his gold, the innkeep, his girls, and other patrons vacate the common room. The Tickler tells Sandor what has happened in the realm, including Tommen's marriage, Joffrey's death, Tyrion's imprisonment, and he claims that Sansa Stark's sister Arya has been found and is to marry Ramsay Bolton, that Harrenhal has been taken by Gregor Clegane, the River Run is under the siege of the Lannisters, and that Randall Tarly has taken Maidenpool. He says only the Blackwoods are still holding out, and the Brackens are fighting them around Raventree Hall. The Tickler says Gregor would prefer that Sandor come back with them to Harrenhal. But when Sandor refuses, the Tickler throws a knife at him. Sandor, the Tickler, and Polliver all draw swords and begin to fight. The squire tries to join, but Arya throws a cup at him and knocks him down. Sandor is not fighting his best, and Arya realizes he drank his wine too fast and is drunk. During the fight, Arya stabs the squire in the belly and then sneaks up behind the Tickler, repeating the questions he once asked his torture victims. Arya stabs the Tickler over and over again in a rage until Sandor stops her. The mortally wounded squire asks for mercy. Sandor tells Arya to give him mercy and asks if she remembers where the heart is. Arya recovers Needle, which was carried by Polliver, and kills the squire. Sandor, seriously wounded, says Gregor must hold the Ruby Ford and that they will make for the salt pans and find a ship in the Vale. They leave the inn and travel, but the Hound is so wounded that he needs tending and they stop. The next day, he's so weak that he falls out of the saddle. While he lies in a fevered sleep, Arya thinks about killing him. He wakes up to see what she is contemplating and he urges her to do it, to give him mercy, but Arya leaves him and rides on. Arya tries to find a boat that goes north, but only finds the trading ship, the Titan's Daughter, with Braavos as its destination. She does not have enough money to get on board. However, Arya shows the captain the coin she received from Jack and Agar and says Valar Morghulis, which causes him to give her both a cabin and passage.
Oof.
Huge chapter. Ton of stuff going on here. One, once again, with Arya, we are back to being the guide of the Riverlands and all that's really going on in the War of the Five Kings with all of the, you know, just information that we get from all the little, like all the small folk as we're going on. Like before it was when we were with Gendry and Hot Pie and Lami and we're like hiding out on the road and you're hearing stuff that's going on. So cool. It's just one of the coolest things about all the Arya chapters. Then you have the stuff with the Hound, and then you get ultimately to, man, we're going to go to Braavos and train with the Faceless Men. I mean, this is like a big, big chapter. A lot is going on here.
Yeah. And if you would think about it in normal circumstances of any other book, it would be like, oh yeah, her entire family was murdered at a wedding. That's her story for this book. Tune into the next time. But George's like, what if I write the best Arya chapter to date at the end of this amazing book? And well, I would say he probably succeeded in that.
Right.
By the way, I love Braavos. Like, I can't wait to read the Braavos chapters.
It's gonna be fire. Another thing I should mention, because it's so obvious to us, obviously, on a reread. But if this was your first read, well, just two chapters ago, you heard, even though Jaime suspects that it's not actually Arya. You did hear the like two chapters ago that Arya is meant to marry Ramsay Bolton. You're like, what?
Yeah, what happened off page?
And then here we go. And it's like, oh, okay. Now you'd be like, okay, now I see what's going on here. And then, of course, they mention that again. And then it's pretty obvious that that's not the case.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're right. On the first read through, you would be thinking something major has happened. And hey, she was somewhere near the Boltons. I think the last time we ran into her, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's like post Red Wedding. So it's not completely unlikely that we would hear about that through the grapevine, because that's how information travels in this series and in this world. But yeah, on the reread, it's very obvious, right?
Yeah. So immediately, I think the thing that sticks out to me is here we go, because there's so much else that happens in this chapter. We kind of glance over it, but it kind of stuck out to me a little bit on this reread. Just maybe like a page in here. If you're looking for Sir, you've come too late, Polliver said. He was at Harrenhal, but now he's not. The queen sent for him. He wore three blades on his belt. Arya saw a long sword on his left hip, and on his right, a dagger and a slimmer blade, too long to be a dirk and too short to be a sword. King Joffrey's dead, you know, he added, poisoned at his own wedding. Arya edged further into the room. Joffrey's dead? She could almost see him with his blonde curls and his mean smile, his fat, soft lips. Joffrey's dead. She knew it ought to make her happy, but somehow she still felt empty inside. Joffrey was dead, but what if Rob was dead too? What did it matter? So she doesn't know that Rob is dead. She, at this point, she still kind of thinks they're... Oh, no, sorry. But if Rob was dead, too, why did it matter? Sorry, that's not what I meant to say. But, you know, like, she's realizing all of this at the same time. But I think we kind of glance over, like, this is something she's dreamed about. That's a name she's been naming for quite some time. But she feels empty. Like, death makes she's beginning to see here that killing people for revenge doesn't necessarily make her feel whole, which she's about to do again. She's about to kill somebody for revenge.
And going to Braavos to kind of learn that trade. Exactly. So, and also I think that there's beginning to become a difference in her brain about like who deserves death and who does not. Cause obviously the Hound he's like, kill me, show me mercy. Mm-hmm. You could also say that possibly she's like, this is a far worse fate. So I hope he suffers even more. I think she didn't have an inner to kill him. That's the way I read it. So, but she
I think she's grown fond enough of him to where she doesn't want to kill him.
Yeah, but then you have the Tickler and the Squire and everything. But like, I mean, honestly, a lot of that's self-defense. And those people are, I mean, the Tickler's horrendous. Like, sure. It's genuinely the worst. I think what Arya is probably thinking is, I would not trade Joffrey for Rob. I think that's kind of where she's at. And also, let's just say, like, this is horrifying for a little girl to go through. It is, it's interesting because we sense this feeling of retribution when the Tickler's getting stabbed to death. You know, whenever this is happening. But the reality is that we just watched a little girl commit murders. So like, it's very conflicting, which is what George writes the best. You know, he's always making us feel two different things in one scene.
Yeah. Well, she's immediately goes from that. And then, you know, she, some of the other stuff, I just want to read some of this stuff too. I forgot you've been hiding under a rock. The Northern girl, Winterfell's daughter. We heard she killed the king with a spell and afterward changed into a wolf with big leather wings like a bat and flew out a tower window, but she left the dwarf behind and Cersei means to have his head. That's stupid, Arya thought. Sansa only knows songs, not spells, and she'd never marry the imp, which she did. So she doesn't know that.
Yeah, the one thing was true.
Right, so the Hound sat on the bench closest to the door. His mouth twitched, but only the burn side. She ought to dip him in wildfire and cook him or tickle him until he turns moon, until he turns the moon turns black. He raised his wine cup and drained it straight away. He's one of them, Arya thought when she saw that. He bit her lip so hard she tasted blood. He's just like they are. I should kill him when he sleeps. So there she is thinking about killing the Hound. Mm-hmm. Like she's thinking maybe he is one of them, but he's doing it because he realizes the room, right? He's okay. Yeah, we'll play along with your little game and then we can get out of here. So yeah. Okay, continuing on a little bit here. They look at her. Arya is sipping her wine, so she cannot see. So they cannot see her mouth. She didn't understand what Polliver was talking about. Sansa has no other sister. Sandor Clegane laughed around. They say that they found her sister. The Hound never flicked an eye at Arya. If you wanted to know, I'd have told you. Are there any ships to Salt Pans? Salt Pans? How should I know? The traitors are back at Maidenpool. I heard Randall Tarly took the castle and locked Moontown. Mooten in a tower cell. I haven't heard shit about the Salt Pans. The Tickler lead forward. What would you put to sea without bidding farewell? Would you put to the sea without bidding farewell to your brother? It gave Arya chills to hear him ask a question. Sir would sooner be returned to Harrenhal with us, Sandor. I bet he would, or King's Landing. Bugger that. Bugger him. Bugger you. The Tickler shrugged, straightened, and reached a hand behind his head to rub the back of his neck. Everything is going to happen at once. Sandor lurched to his feet. Polliver drew his long sword, and the Tickler's hand whipped around in a blur to send something silver flashing across the common room. If the Hound had not been moving, the knife might have cored the apple of his throat. Instead, it only grazed his ribs. So, different kind of tension in the show than it is here, but it's ultimately the same. They just it ends up working out the same. They kind of changed because he's still telling him in the show, like, hey, you should do it. But the Hound immediately, like, here, like, the Hound's just kind of like it feels a little more out of nowhere. Like, the tension is rising and then boom, he just kicks it off. Whereas in the show, I mean, he pretty much makes it clear, like, I'm gonna fucking kill you. Right?
Yeah.
If one of your mouths says anything with, I don't get any more chicken, I think it's the best.
It's one of the best scenes.
It's so good. Have you ever seen the people who they use like the sound box where they're doing it, like, and people, somebody,
yes,
have you seen the video where the Hound calls like Popeyes or KFC? Yeah. It's one of the funniest freaking things I've ever, if I can remember, I'll try to like clip it in here, you know, like clip in the YouTube video into the podcast so people can hear it.
Such a good scene, dude. And also, who doesn't like a good end scene, by the way?
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Pronuvo. Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Fantasy book.
Yeah, especially this end. So much happens here. This is like,
this is crazy.
This is a ground. This is a ground zero for every big event that happens.
Yeah, there's a lot of foot traffic, which, you know, some people might say, oh, isn't that convenient? But actually, it does make sense because it's like a very popular road to be traveled. Mm-hmm. They need business. There's not one on every corner. So it's not actually that shocking for a place like this to
It's literally what kicks off the War of the Five Kings.
Yeah.
It's also what kicks off Arya becoming a faceless man.
Yeah. Going to Braavos.
Perhaps leading to the Hound becoming like in Clegane Bowl, because he's going to get injured here and then he's going to end up at like the monastery. And like, I mean,
so you think he's Gravedigger?
100%. I think he's Gravedigger.
Yeah, I think he is too.
Yeah, because I've said for years, I think, again, if we ever get the books, that the way George will do it in the books is Clegane Bowl will happen much earlier, and that the mountain will be. There will be a trial by combat, and it just kind of seems like he's with the faith, you know, and like this small church feels like maybe not. Yeah, but that's always how I've kind of viewed it, is like that would be a way to do Clegane Bowl earlier.
Yeah, and also I think it'd be a lot better in that context than it would be in the show. How it was done in the show. I know a lot of people don't like Clegane Bowl in the show and they say it's nonsense. Honestly, I think it's fine. Like, it's fine. I didn't mind it. There's some cool moments and stuff. I love the Hound as a character, so I'm just glad he got screen time and got some sort of ending. But I do think the book and the way it's being set up by George is way cooler, because it has more of an impact other than, oh, I better go kill my brother real quick. Like, it's much different than that.
Right. Yeah. Because I don't know if they're going to blow. I don't know if he's going to blow up the Sept of Baelor in the.
I don't. So the only reason why I think possibly it could happen is because we do know about the Dragonfire and casks, and it's specifically mentioned. But I've always felt like that's actually going to play a role near the ending. Like Dany or you know, maybe the White Walkers come and then they end up using, like, just something else. You did
see that. That was something cool in season 8 where Dany's torching King's Landing, and like then you do see wildfire here and there because like it's part of it.
Yeah. Oh, you know what else I always thought? I always thought this Cersei kind of doing a scouring of the Shire type thing. So whenever they all come back from fighting the White Walkers or whatever, King's Landing has been raised because of the Dragonfire. But here's the thing, and this is just something for me personally. I would be very, very, very disappointed if the Long Night or the battle with the others, the big climax, didn't actually happen in King's Landing. I think it goes against everything that the story is trying to show in the book specifically. It's about this this existential threat that's looming over us all, and we can't help but be petty about politics and regency and everything else. So it has to come to the front door. Like, it has to come to the place that should have been paying attention all along, which is King's Landing. In the show, they didn't do it because they said, oh, the real thing is actually who sits on the Iron Throne. I think in the books, it's completely different.
I do too. Yeah.
The show is much more throne centric. Obviously, it's part of the story in the books, but I don't think any of us are super invested about who's sitting on the throne at what point as readers. It's just kind of part of the game. Now, Dany getting on the throne, I do think that there's some investment there. I think a lot of people want to see that. But again, I think that the White Walkers have to come to King's Landing for it to tie in thematically to the story.
Yeah, I agree. I think the White Walkers have to do much more than just have a big battle at Winterfell.
I'd be so disappointed if that was the case. Now, if they battle Winterfell and wipe it out, and then they come to King's Landing and we get a part two, that's cool. But if
the final battle takes place at the Trident or something, and maybe doesn't make it all the way to King's Landing, then okay.
It's got to go south.
It's got to go. Yeah, you need to have, because people have always talked about, like, well, maybe it'll happen at the Trident. And that'd be like, you know, because that's a significant place.
And Rhaegar comes back from the dead something. And he's the Night King.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but yeah, you know, something. So, okay. So we'll kind of continue on with the chapter here. So they're fighting. A lot of the fighting is going on. Again, there's actually a lot more detail in this than there is in the show. But Throw down the sword and we'll take you to Harrenhal, Pollyver told him, so Gregor can finish me himself. The Tickler said, maybe he'll give you to me. If you want me, come get me. Sandor pushes away from the wall and stood in a half crouch behind the bench, his sword across his belly. Like, you don't think we will? You're drunk. Might be, said the Hound, but you're dead. And then George again, he's so good at describing action scenes. It is one of the reasons when I went back and listened to Hedge Knight and I was like, man, that tourney is just written so well. And and again, they changed it for the show, but like when he's like riding on thunder and it's just like thunder like dove his feet into the ground and like slammed his foot back and charged.
It's so active.
It's so good. I think a very underrated aspect of George's writing, I would say, is action.
Yeah, because I would agree with that.
We think about like theories and drama, but the action itself, I mean, just listen to this. Like, his foot lashed out and caught the bench, driving it hard into Pollyver's shin. Somehow the bearded man kept his feet, but the Hound ducked under his wild slash and brought his own sword up in a vicious backhand cut. Blood splattered on the ceiling and walls. The blade caught in the middle of Pollyver's face, and when the Hound wrenched it loose, half his head came with it. The Tickler backed away. Arya could smell his fear. The short sword in his hand had suddenly seemed almost a toy against the long blade the Hound was holding. And it wasn't armored either. He moved swiftly, light on his feet, never taking his eyes off Sandor Clegane. It was the easiest thing in the world for Arya to step up behind him and stab him.
Yeah, it's kind of like Alan Richardson, his neighbor. You know, he just kind of realized he's not done. Yeah, dude, I think George writes wonderful combat. A couple of things to note about combat. One, I think it's extremely difficult to write it to be compelling. I actually find a lot of combat in books to be very boring. A lot of times I just want to see what happens like as a fallout of it rather than reading about, you know, this extended action scene over 20 pages or whatever.
How many fantasy books, by the way, do you read like a week?
Oh, a week. I mean, it's far less now, but I, you know, over the last few years, I've probably read like 600-700.
Yeah. I mean, for your
YouTube, I'm decently well read in fantasy. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, Jimmy knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, I'm not a super expert, but I know the genre pretty well and the lineage, and you know, I've read a lot of the authors who inspired George, and it's been
if you're talking action, how would you rank like some people who are like some top five like people?
Action, I mean, I, and fantasy.
I think just from what I've read in Wheel of Time, which I've read about, you know, maybe not
six half books,
the series,
yeah, seven? Yeah,
yeah. So a good ways into it. I feel like Robert Jordan's pretty good at it.
Yeah, I definitely, especially Heroes, the Heroes of the Horn scene in Great Hunt is pretty phenomenal. I think Steven Erikson does a fabulous job, especially because the stuff that Erikson is doing is so otherworldly. Like, there are no, you can't say like, oh, this reminds me of whatever battle from the English-French War. You know what I mean? Like, it's very much a world that he's built that's completely unique. Like, there's one scene where like they're fighting this dragon that's chained, but the dragon's like the size of like the sky. I mean, it's just like there's so many cool things. I think R. Scott Baker is also fairly good at writing combat, but he does a Homer style thing where he like zooms out to 1,000 feet out of the POV and just like describes the battle from afar. I think that's kind of cool. Now, an author that is phenomenal at writing combat, maybe one of the very best, and it's who inspires George to write the way he does, Bernard Cornwell, who writes historical fiction. He has an Arthurian trilogy. He has the Saxon Chronicles. He has the Sharp series. He's like one of the best-selling historical authors of all time. His action is very similar to George, and George actually like mentions him as an inspiration. Bernard Cornwell wrote the foreword for the Folio Society Clash of Kings, I think. Mm-hmm. I think. So like they're boys, like they're good friends. So those are the ones I think stand out probably the most. I would say a newer series that has good action is The Greenbone Saga by Fonda Lee. I'm actually not a huge fan of the series personally. I think it's fine, but she does write action really well. She's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, has had some combat experience.
She knows what she's talking about.
Yeah, she writes very realistic. I mean, for a fantasy world, realistic, but you know, people aren't getting knocked out and waking up 9 days later and have no brain injuries. That's like one of my least favorite things in the world. Even great authors do that, and it pisses me off every time. It's just one of those things. But yeah, I think George writes phenomenal combat. Combat can be very boring to me. It can also be you know,
because I would say even though I haven't read many of his books, I would say that even like Fever Dream, which I read earlier, you know,
great,
or a couple months ago, yeah, the scene where the Marsh and the what John, mm-hmm, whatever his name is, the vampire guy, like when they're having, yeah, when they're having like some of those battles, like epic.
So good, right? And I don't know about you, but like vampire doesn't really strike me as like a huge combat scene. I know that they're eventually gonna have to get stabbed or, you know, whatever it might be, but the reason why George is good at combat, other than the fact that I think he writes very well, just the words he chooses, is he understands tension. And if there's one thing that you could describe A Song of Ice and Fire, specifically A Storm of Swords, with, is tension. The whole book, yeah, is tense.
100%. Yeah, I mean,
he gets it.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, well, let's continue on here. So, now, you know, obviously the Hound gets injured, and we're gonna move into like the next segment of this, which is like her saying goodbye to the Hound, and then ultimately her going to Braavos. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Jimmy?
All right. So first time reading this, I would have never guessed that Arya would be like, after the Red Wedding and her, you know, basically almost being to her family and them all being murdered, and then we aren't sure if she lives because the chapter ends on a cliffhanger. Dude, you would never have expected her going to Braavos. Now, obviously, Jack and Hagar had given her the coin. Rule of fiction says that she must use coin, Chekhov's gun. But I don't know. I just didn't think she'd be going to Braavos. I certainly didn't think she'd be going alone. I figure her and the Hound were buddy cop special for the rest of the series. So I think that's cool. Another thing real quick about the inn. What a different setting than the court scene we're going to have with Tyrion. Also the Red Wedding. Like, the inn is just such more of a like really tight, intimate, almost quiet setting in some ways. I thought that was kind of interesting to contrast that with the other big moments of the book. But yeah, are you getting on a boat to Braavos at the end of this book, if the first time through, is kind of just a wild card.
Right.
Just more he's fit into this book. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I want to pull it up here. So, because this is the end of Arya for this book. So the next time you would be with her is actually, I think, very early in A Feast for Crows, because it's obviously Arya 1. I can look up one and see when that is. So I think it's like, it's still a couple chapters in. So it's like, it's probably like chapter 6 or something like that. Mm-hmm. For us, it will actually be, because I'm pulling up the Boiled Leather read here, it will be chapter 14. So yeah, A Feast for Crows 7, but it will be chapter 14 for us because we're blending some Dance of Dragons.
Yeah, we're doing some Boiled Leather.
Yeah. So I'm with you. Watching it for the first time, I remember when I was watching Game of Thrones, because I watched this part before I read the book, and I was like, I remember I was like at work, because I was like downloaded the episode, and I was at work and I was watching it like on my phone. it was when I was back in college, and I was like working at this restaurant, and so I was just like, you know, and I remember sitting there watching it, like, God, this is so good. Now, I definitely like the book in this case more, because I do not like the Brienne Hound fight in the books or in the show.
Yeah,
I don't like it at all. This is so much better.
I agree totally. Right. And the Brienne stuff ties into the Sansa changes and all that stuff.
That is probably my least favorite moment until the show starts going south a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I would say because other than that, I think some of the changes I like more. I like Tywin more than Tywin.
Yeah, yeah. There's good.
I think that's a better choice by having Tywin Lannister being at Harrenhal. But the Brienne thing, it just felt like, I don't know, it just felt like they wanted to do a cool fight. Makes Brienne seem like weird and crazy. Like, she actually seems
unlikable in that moment. Yes. In that scene. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's entirely even unnecessary for the show context itself.
It doesn't really end up mattering too much, I would say.
At all. You can strip that scene out. of Game of Thrones, and in the context of the whole story, it makes like zero difference.
Yeah, just like
other than the fact that she kind of knows who Brienne is when she fights when Arya fights Brienne, which is one of the cooler fight scenes in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But she sort of has like respect for her when she's fighting her, and it's like it's an odd scene. It's an odd. It's so weird.
I kind of want to watch it again now that we read this chapter. Maybe I'll do that.
You should. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So I agree. Yeah. So, some of the other stuff that's going on here, by the way, is the Hound is weak and she's thinking quite a lot about what to do with him. She's like wondering, she's like, I wouldn't have to kill him. If I just rode off and left him, he'll die all by himself. He'll die of fever. You know, she thinks about like killing him, you know, like the Hound killed Micah and more, but he's killed 100 Micah. So she's putting this whole thing in her head. And
she's
she's trying to weigh it. And then his eyes open. And she says, still, he asks, like, what he says, you remember where the heart is? As still as stone, she stood. I was only, you know, don't lie. I hate liars. And so, do you mean me to beg? Do it. And then, you know, she says, Micah, and stepped away from him. You don't deserve the gift of mercy. And then, you know, ultimately, maybe some real wolves will find you, Arya thought. Maybe they'll smell you when the sun goes down. And then you'll learn what wolves do to dogs. You shouldn't have hit me with an axe, she said. You should have saved my mother. She turned her horse and rode away from him and never looked back once.
Heavy, 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 heavy stuff right there. I mean, we can talk about Lady. She's still a stone. Lady Stoneheart thinks about her mother. She definitely does stuff in Nymeria and a warging state. Like, there's just a lot right there. But what wolves do to dogs is an all-timer. What a line.
Yeah. And she thinks about it too a little bit here too. She says a little bit further after she's riding off, and you're getting a little bit of exposition about, like, you know, some of the stuff, like, you know, towns burned down and whatnot. But she says she would have never cheated the Hound, she thought, during the long walk back to the docks. The distance seemed to have grown by miles since she's ridden it. And then ultimately we get to the ship, where she's saying, hey, I could work, I could scrub decks. He says no, gives her back her coin. She says, I have no home, I have no pack, and now I don't even have a horse. The captain was turning away when she said, what ship is this? Titan's Daughter, Free City of Braavos. She hears the thing, Valor Magulis, she said, as if she'd known what it meant. Valor to Harris, he replies, touching his brow. Of course, you shall have a cabin.
Mm-hmm. And now the journey begins.
Yeah, what a cool ending. So yeah, this is top five Arya chapters.
Oh yeah,
easily. Yeah. If just certainly of this reread, but
I think Dondarrion scene, this, the Joffrey stuff. But honestly, Matt, I think she hasn't peaked yet. Like, I think some of her best chapters are now in the next two books.
Yeah, if we ever get them, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, like, Feast and Dance, but then the preview chapter, Mercy,
yeah,
phenomenal chapter.
Yeah.
George puts a lot of care in Arya's because it's his wife's favorite character.
Well, there's just, she's one of the best characters. I mean, we did like a POV, I think Ez and I did a POV ranking. You and I should do that. We should redo it.
Oh, hell
ranking,
yeah.
Ranking every POV character in A Song of Ice and Fire. That could be fun. Maybe once we finish this, we can do that. We can do some in between stuff, because the way it's going to line up with the show. But yeah, I agree. Banger chapter, because there's so much that happens with it, with her and the Hound. And then I think it's going to come back. Like, I don't think Arya will not see the Hound, and maybe Sansa will see the Hound again as well, but I just, there's too much there for them to not have another interaction with him, which is why I think I think it makes more sense that Clegane Bowl happens early. I think he's going to be like the champion of the faith. I think we will have a trial by combat, and then I think he kills them. I think he kills the Mountain, and because even if you still want to go with like Cersei Mad Queen without her like fleeing back to King's Landing or whatever, but again, you have all the Young Griff stuff that plays a role in it. But even still, she doesn't need the Mountain to be all this stuff.
Yeah,
I guess the Mountain to be her like armed by the side.
Yeah, and I do think that the Mountain I mean, I do think he's really important for Cersei's arc in some ways, because it's like her trump card against a lot of people. But we don't know. I mean, when young Griff comes, I expect him to take over. I think Cersei ends up in Casterly Rock.
Right.
But here's the only thing. I think if they do, you know, let's say we end up getting brother versus brother. After that, like, I don't really know what you do with the Hound as a character.
Oh, they might both die.
You just took the words. I think Sandor dies, or maybe succumbs to wounds after beating his brother, possibly. Or but maybe then, he rides off to the sunset.
Maybe no. You could. I think what you could do with him is you could still have him go kind of the route that he does in Game of Thrones, in which maybe he links up with the Brotherhood without banners, because now he'll be a different person. He'll have beaten his brother. He'll get his gold, and I think he could still show up at the Battle of Winterfell with Arya and
or battle possibly wherever,
Sansa, right? Or maybe at that point it's revealed that Sansa is actually the Woman of the Vale, and so he thinks, okay, well, I'll just go to the Vale. That could be kind of interesting, and then that would give Sansa a cool piece that could tie into her going like north to Winterfell, and then he's there with her at Winterfell, and that's where she could run into Arya. So I think maybe that's going to be the Hound's role.
What if the Hound ends up leading the Knights of the Vale? That'd be pretty wild, wouldn't it? Sick. That'd be very.
I've still always held out hope. You know, not that I want him to be, but I've always loved the idea of him potentially being like maybe just like the person wielding Lightbringer, just because it's like something to do with fire.
Overcoming his fear of fire,
sure.
Yeah, be character moment.
Yeah, because it's not going to happen, but I've still just always loved the idea of like Azor Ahai being like the least likely person we expect, and then
I think it is.
It's not going to happen. It's not.
It is unlikely, but I will say this: I do think the Hound is going to be more important than he seemed to be in the show.
Sure.
To the overall overarching plot, if he doesn't die fighting his brother, assuming that even happens, but if you had to pick Hound meeting either Arya or Sansa, which one would you pick? Like reuniting?
Oh, I think he needs to meet. Probably Sansa, actually, because his role, this could be the final moment of them with Arya, the way it works. Like he has fulfilled his role. I do like the reunion that happens in the show with the Hound and
oh, it's great.
And Sansa, and Arya, it's great.
Yeah, it's really great. And one of the things I said, you know, they rushed it so much. If we had gotten a couple more seasons, we could have had another buddy cop season with them. And I think people would have been really happy with it.
Yeah. It's just ultimately like, because the whole big deal I would say is Clegane Bowl has to happen earlier, because there's too many other variables in the books to happen for it to be like this final battle that means kind of nothing in the show.
Yeah, for sure. And I also think if we're going to say like, you know, they're going to meet somebody, I mean, I still don't really understand how Arya is going to get back to Westeros. Like, I don't know what that catalyst will actually be. So I kind of think that Sansa is more likely to be the one reunited with Sandor, but I also think that would be more satisfying because Sansa is a completely different person with a completely different worldview,
right?
And the fear she had for Sandor, and she thinks about him a lot in the books, and also has the mismemory of that he kissed her when he didn't. At least we don't think he did. I think that maybe
she'll run into more people in Essos that will cause her to realize it's time to go back.
Oh, Arya?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? It just makes you wonder, like, does she somehow get involved with Tyrion and Dany on the way back? I don't know. I really don't know. One thing
I think Tyrion would be the best candidate, because then she can ask her about like my sister, and maybe she would, but then he would explain everything to her. Like, no, I never touched her. All this, you know.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, there's always a way for Tyrion.
Technically, right now, she's supposed to be like, you know, all the other groups everyone joins, where you're supposed to forgive all the bonds and become a true no one. And
yeah, well, I'm not sure where it would go, but I will say this, and this is one of these other things that I'll say that would be very disappointing if it's not the case. Her abilities as a faceless man have to matter more than it did in the show. Has to matter more. The fact that her being a faceless man, truly, really didn't matter that much. The Night King thing, yeah, I guess she's a martial, you know, prowess type.
But that could have come from like Cirio Pharrell and being
that's what I'm saying.
It felt like a kind of a combination of all these things, as opposed to like the actual faceless men stuff did almost nothing.
It could have been really cool to have her be the one to kill Danny. And I remember whenever she's walking and then she's seeing like the marching, like she basically sees like the fascist army being assembled. And I was like, oh my God, like they're giving Arya everything. She's going to kill Danny for John.
Yeah. And she sees a horse and leaves.
Yeah. Arya horse face. It all makes
sense. She bangs Gendry, sees a horse and leaves.
Well, it's west of Westeros.
California. Brought to you by Paramount.
Oh God, no.
Jeez.
Oh man. Good chapter. Really good chapter.
Well, it's gonna be a while before we're with Arya again. Like June or July or August. Something like that.
House of Dragon comes out in July, right? June.
When? Yeah. So
yeah, they're on the red carpet today, in the UK, and people are saying they look stunning.
Well, yeah, it does look great. Okay. With that, guys, I want to thank you for playing Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 75, Samwell 4. Talk about been a while.
I forget who Samwell even is. If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.